Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, helping product managers become product masters. Listen and get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host. Let's talk about influence for a moment. As a product manager or innovator, don't you want more influence in your organization? You need influence so you can better create value for customers. Without influence, you can't build support for your ideas and convince others to help you. Influence also allows you to be more strategic in your work, which is the same thing executive leaders want from product managers. When I share that this podcast and my training helps product managers become product masters, increasing influence is the key factor involved for the product manager. Part of the journey towards mastery is thinking more strategically and more in terms of value, not only to customers, but to the organization as a whole. This means moving from involvement in the design of products to involvement in the design of businesses. And that is exactly what today's guest is here to talk about, thinking of business design through the lens of product management and innovation. My guest is Jay Peters. He's the managing director for Park USA. Now, Park is one of the leading experts in the management of design and innovation. They consult, coach, and educate on how to maximize the value of design. You'll find the summary of the discussion with Jay, along with other valuable resources at theeverydayinnovator.com/124. Enjoy the interview. Jay, thanks so much for joining the Everyday Innovators.
Thank you for having me. I'm very happy to be part of this and looking forward to the call.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to talking because it's this aspect of design that we're going to talk about, but not in the traditional way that product managers might think about, which is, you know, designing physical products or designing software. We're going to talk about it more in an organizational context, and we'll get into that in a bit. But first, I'm curious just to get some background on you to kind of set the stage here about how you got involved in design and what was that evolution of your interests. Looked at your background education, right? It looks like you have some industrial experience here too. Tell us about that path, your path in design.
Sure. So academic-wise, I was studying architecture, an undergraduate. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people probably didn't realize there was a profession called industrial design. That was a very serendipitous encounter. When I found out what industrial design was, I changed my major the next day. And graduated with a degree in industrial design. And then fresh out of college, I was a young, naive designer with a $1 million idea. Mm-hmm. Developed a product and prototype, shopped it around. Nobody wanted to buy into this. So it's kind of, you know, raise your baby or kill it. So I decided to go at it alone. As a designer, I quickly learned everything about business. Mm. So marketing, sales, financing, logistics, HR, PR, everything. So I'm trained as a designer, but mostly my experience has been around business, entrepreneurship, startup. And I actually went back to grad school many years later for something called business design, which is pretty much a hybrid between the two.
And I had no idea there was actually a program out there called business design as a graduate degree. So I found that interesting. But you can't leave us hanging here. What was that product that you dreamed up and went after?
The product was a collaboration with some professional athletes, and it was a action figure for action sports. Hmm. This was late 90s, early 2000s, when the X Games were becoming popular. Snowboarding was just coming to the Olympics. So it was a toy, but we had a very actually, it's interesting looking back, a very unconventional business model to bring to the market. So it wasn't a toy per se. It was a training tool, collector's items, and we went through different distribution and retail outlets. And that was part of the secret to our success.
Very good. And so it sounds like there was some success there before you moved on into business design.
Absolutely. Yes.
Okay.
It was a good run.
Good. I find it very fascinating, those connections to the interest in architecture originally, and then industrial design, the design of physical products. And now this more nebulous thing, I think, to get our hands around, which is less design organizations, and specifically, you're looking at designing the leadership aspect of organizations, right?
Yes, we're still focused on design, but it's more about the leadership, the management, or you could almost put it as a label of design strategy.
Okay,
so is the right strategy around design to enable business to prosper?
Okay, and you use this term called design value. and how management and leadership indeed impacts the design value of an organization. And I want to dive into, you know, the specifics about that, kind of the framework that you use around design value. Kind of frame that for us first. When you say design value of an organization, what is that and why is it important?
Well, it's pretty straightforward. It's essentially the value that design can bring into an organization. Now, the challenge or the opportunity is there's a lot of different values that it can bring forward. Mm-hmm. So we have a framework, as you mentioned, where we start to frame it out and identify and dissect what are the different levels or contributions that design can bring value to an organization.
Okay.
I think it's interesting now, not to digress too much, but when most people think about value, they think about economic value, of course, money and mm-hmm. profit coming in. So this is the bottom line value. But we see a big shift in many industries where it's about the triple bottom line.
Right.
So the value across the triple bottom line. And if the listeners aren't familiar with the triple bottom line, it's in addition to economical, it's also social, environmental impact. So are you doing good for the community? Are you doing good for the environment? Or, of course, are you not doing good, harming the environment, using unfair labor, mm-hmm. business practices, et cetera, which is becoming very, very prevalent for all industries.
Yeah, absolutely. This falls in that issue, that space of sustainability. And are we building a sustainable organization? And we use that triple bottom line aspect to measure that. We used to think of this, right, as the three P's of profit, planet, and people. And now it's kind of evolved into that, you know, economic, social, environmental aspects. So,
yeah.
Okay. So this helps us understand kind of the stakeholder group that you're addressing, because it's the stakeholders that are represented by all three of those pillars there. In your framework, when you talk about the types of design value, how many pieces are there in that framework?
There's four, let's say, main buckets, okay, and then some subsets around that. And just to clarify, to reiterate, so when we say design, it's more about the approach, the strategy, the methodology, the organization. You need all that to enable great design output, whatever that artifact is. Mm-hmm. And of course, it centers around a product or a service, if it's a digital solution. And then you have the packaging, point of sale, the whole ecosystem or touch points. So we enable those end deliverables to deliver value. And so we identify four main buckets of value, and I can explain them quickly for you. So
yeah, let's walk through each of them.
Yeah. So the first bucket is profit. And as we just mentioned, economical bottom line. Mm-hmm. So a company at the end of the day, even nonprofits, they have to make revenue and balance their P&L to keep the lights on. And design can help drive profit several different ways. So design can help sell more of the same offer, mm-hmm. or create a premium offer to sell the same for more money.
Okay.
So both ways are delivering more revenue, but also around profit, design can help decrease costs, decreasing manufacturing costs or decreasing marketing costs. So of course, money in, money out. If you're saving here, you're retaining more.
So really addressing both sides of that cost profit equation, where you're looking at, so the dimension here of adding profit, designing more profit, how can we sell more products that we have now? How can we sell products at a higher price? How can we drive some cost out of that that experience of creating the product and getting it to customers?
Exactly.
Okay.
Absolutely.
So first part of the four-part framework is focus on more profit. What's next?
Next bucket is around brand or brand equity. Hmm. And design can help increase brand exposure, brand loyalty, brand awareness, brand desirability. So I just kind of throw a few out there. It's really about brand positioning and brand perception, and then having brand recommendations. What's interesting here, and this is where you open up a lot of discussions in many organizations and most organizations, when you talk brand, that's where the marketeers kind of pipe up and say, oh, brand, that's our domain. We're owners of brand. Well, design can also do a lot for branding, mm-hmm. With the package, the product, the service, all the touch points. So it's really about helping drive that brand forward, whatever that brand strategy is.
I don't know if you have a specific example that you can share of a customer encounter that you've worked with engaging in the design of the brand to create more equity or more loyalty or those aspects you talked about?
Sure. So we helped a company named Beiersdorf, which is a German private company. They own the brand Nivea or Nivea, depending where you come from. This is the affordable luxury skin cream.
Okay.
Yeah. And so we helped them with a strategy to reposition their brand as a premium offer in the market. They were becoming commoditized and highly competitive with others, positioning themselves the same. So we helped them using their heritage, their brand attributes, their brand history, their brand values to not just reposition the product in a packaging, but the full, you could say, brand experience. Mm-hmm. So the point of sale, their flagship stores, all their communications, digital, everything was developed to be cohesive and holistic. So that experience of the brand gave the user the sense that it was a very premium brand across all the different touch points, all the different experiences.
Yeah, so that customer experience was consistent. And that would have related back to your more profit piece of the framework, because in positioning it as a premium brand, they were finding ways to sell what they had, I assume, at a higher price too.
Yes, they were selling more and at a higher price. And they did have to make some investments, so this wasn't about lowering cost. It was about the other side of increasing revenues and income.
Mm-hmm. Okay, thanks for sharing the example. So that's on the brand design aspects. Third part here?
Then we have a third bucket around innovation.
Oh, it's one of my favorite words.
Yeah, I'm sure it's very close to home for you, and you could probably have a whole talk around this as well. But like brand, I think it's interesting when you talk innovation in an organization, this is usually where R&D or engineering will step up and say, hey, innovation, that's what we do. And they do, not to discredit that, they drive a lot of innovation, but that's usually internal or technology. Mm-hmm. And we believe that design can help drive innovation from a consumer or desirable standpoint, which leads to potentially better innovation, faster time to market through process, people, and structure, and potentially more IP, intellectual property, patents, and trademarks that can be utilized by the organization, which, of course, drives back to that first bucket of profit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and that perspective on innovation that is really consumer-driven. So we're instead of being technology-led, being market or consumer-led, makes me think of tools or methodologies like design thinking, where we're trying to explore a problem deeply with our consumer, and then trying to find what would be the right solution, and then getting R&D involved if necessary, or just engineering involved, development involved to make the product. Is that consistent with that bucket there, design thinking methodology?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say it's outside in innovation. So instead of having a technology or a solution and looking for an application, mm-hmm. it's finding an unmet need through design thinking and some design methodologies, design research, and then coming and finding a solution or creating or inventing or innovating a solution for that desired outcome, which is more customer driven.
Excellent. Yeah. We have pretty good tools these days for those elements. And at the moment, it used to be a two-sided coin, and then I adopted a new one. So it's now a three-sided coin, which is the lean startup kind of practices and design thinking, which when you look at them, they're really similar to each other, actually. And then what the Alex Osterweil has done with the business model canvas, and now the value proposition design, that value proposition design kind of adds a good framework for good tools, I should say, for helping us with those, as you said, the outside in kind of perspective, focusing on the customer and how do we create more value for the customer?
Absolutely.
And this is why I like talking about innovation, because that's what to me, innovation is all about. Okay. So we got profit here. We went to brand equity and innovation, and our fourth bucket.
The fourth bucket we would call, change as a loose term. This is more around culture or society change. Hmm. This is where design can help do a couple things. So for an organization, design can help them to be more creative, more innovative, We have a lot of clients come to us and they say they want to be more creative or innovative. How do they do that? Design can help that. Champion a culture of design or innovation. And from a society standpoint, we believe that design can help a lot around what is coined as the wicked problems, right? So these problems that will never end, solution around pollution, homelessness, traffic. So as you just mentioned, design thinking. So using design thinking to help solve these bigger wicked problems around culture and society.
Yeah, the big thorny issues that we have yet to find good solutions for. My ears perked up a lot when you were talked about the organizational aspects when organizations come to you and ask for, you know, we want to be more creative, we want to be more innovative. As product managers, some of us have direct influence over those sort of actions. A lot of the time, we just we're eager to see something like that happen in the organization because there's barriers that get in the way that limit the effectiveness of what we know we could do with offering more value to customers. Can you talk about any more mechanics there in terms of tools that you use? Are you trying to change the culture of the organization? Are you getting people on board with just thinking more creatively? What goes on there?
Yeah, so there's all different types of approaches, of course, depending on the objectives of the client, the situation, the strategy, and all the different elements. You know, let's say generically speaking, a lot of companies want to be more creative. Thanks to the design-led companies out there, they see the Apples, the Googles, the Dysons of the world, and they want to be more creative because they see, not that it's just cool, but they're doing very well with market share. So, and it's not about, you know, making a cool, creative environment. It's not about, you know, parking a bus in a lobby or throwing beanbags around.
It's not that easy? Really?
It's not that easy. So if anyone's going in that direction, please stop now. It's probably going to actually be more harmful than helpful. For us, we have a very, you know, management perspective. So it's coming in and changing the way of working. And the very first thing is creating awareness and understanding. What is design? What is innovation? Most importantly, what is it for that organization? Because we could have a whole many hours talk around that because there is no one definition or design for design or innovation. I think it's contextual. So every company might have their different definition of that. So it's about creating common understanding, awareness, and then ways forward where they can deliver around that. And this is where we do a lot of our work. And I always kid around that it's the non-sexy side of design. So designers can make sexy things, whatever that is. And we design things like process, tools, organizational structures, so people can then start to work in a more creative way.
Okay. So let's get a little practical about that. And it's been interesting as I have talked to people through doing this podcast on this issue of, you know, how did you bring in an innovation program to an organization, or how did you change the culture, right? That the first element often is, well, we created a shared definition of, in the first place, what does that mean to us? What does it mean to be innovative? What does it mean to be creative? And what we're trying to get to. It seems like often there's organizations that say at the senior leadership levels that, you know, we want to be more of those things, right? We need to be more innovative. We want more profit from new products. We're going to do that. But then the execution isn't aligned to that. It's likely, and these are big blanket statements, right? I'm stereotyping here, but it's likely that there's some pretty big barriers in the organization. The people that are responding to that message, that vision, and then they bump their heads into these barriers, and over time, they just stop, you know, trying to push forward things that really would offer more value for customers. I'm curious about where you are entering the organization when you deal with this, because it really seems like for any change to happen in this area, it needs to be top down, and how you're trying to work through a way forward to recognize that we have these barriers. We need processes that aren't just new processes. We got to break down these barriers too.
Yeah. So of course it's much easier if there's a burning platform and it's top down and they know they need to change. And it's kind of, let's say, mandates. It's easier. It's still not easy because you have to relearn a way of working. You have to reteach them a different way of working. And many people are set the way that they've done things. So change is always, you know, resisted until they understand that it's really beneficial to change. It's going to help them be more efficient, more effective. But we do have a lot of cases where it is, let's say, bottom up, that design and innovation wants to do more, a little bit more on the front end. So just doing some insights or exploration or some early fuzzy front end work then can then feed the traditional new product development pipeline. Hmm. And I can give you an example and some let's say ancillary examples around that as well. So top down burning platform, that's easy. A case in point there is we had a call from the CEO of Bang & Olufsen.
B&O, famous audio company, right?
Yes, very, very well known.
Any B&O fans might get mad at me for this. Really super stylish equipment. I might go other places for same price point audio quality, but yeah. Really cool style. Okay.
Cool stuff. They're a very traditional Danish design brand. So they're very well known for their high quality audio and their Danish design. But they were having problems with innovation. They were taking too long to get to markets. They were getting beat by the competition coming with faster, more relevant, lower priced competitive offers. So they know they needed a change. So we were contacted by the CEO to help drive a transformational change, which is to redevelop their innovation process. And the big challenge there was around cultural change. There had been gentlemen there in the organization for 40 plus years, that were used to ways of working, and they didn't really want to change. They were comfortable with how they were working. So it took quite a while to convince them that it was the right thing to do. One of our approaches using some design methodologies is we don't ever come in and do a project for a client. We always do it with them. So it's really about co-creation, rapid prototyping, piloting, iterating. So they have a sense of ownership from the beginning. It's not the not invented here syndrome where it's already met with resistance. So they're part of the process to develop that change that they want to then take forward. But it really was about unlearning the ways of working so they could relearn how to work in a new process with new people, tools, et cetera.
Right. And that burning platform situation, you know, this is when the company recognizes if we don't do something different, we're not going to be able to talk about this in a few years because we won't exist. So that's a pretty motivating, you know, place to come from. It at least encourages some change. And there was a research that a friend of mine that did that's been on the podcast a couple of times that deals with organizational change. I actually sent you his information before, John Latham. And one of the CEOs shared a quote when he had this problem with his executive team that, you know, same thing. They're kind of entrenched, not real keen on changing. And the CEO's response was, well, let's try this for a year. If it doesn't work, we can go back to what wasn't working before, right? It's like where we are now isn't working and it's not going to get any better without us changing.
Absolutely. And we say the larger the organization, the larger time it takes to implement the change. So it is really about starting small, finding some internal champions, getting some quick wins, showing some success, and then growing on that success.
Right. You know, I'm someone that's wired that I kind of, there's things I don't want to change, but at the same time, I like new. And so I often embrace change. And so for listeners that are kind of like that, you know, the key issue with the resistance to change here is this is people's livelihood. You know, we're asking them to do something that is different from what's made them successful before. These guys that have been around for 20, 30, 40 years in the organization, or even two, right? It doesn't matter. What they're doing today, they've been successful for. And now you're asking them to move into an unknown territory where they don't know what that's going to be like. Can I still be successful or not?
Absolutely.
So that's a really good example of the burning platform. Do you happen to have an example of the bottom-up approach and what the results were there?
I do. So I can give you another example. I can't name the client, but they were looking to be more innovative. They were a world leader in manufacturing of bathroom fixtures. So toilets, showers, basins, et cetera, doing over 50 million pieces worldwide a year. Hmm. They did have a strategic direction to be more innovative and deliver more experiences. So they did kind of assemble a front end team. And basically, through some design research, some ethnography, they basically discovered a whole new market opportunity. Hmm. So they were They were focused on a limited space, which is being the bathroom, but they found out that some personal hygiene was happening outside of that room. So that opened up a huge opportunity to further their product offer and broaden the market.
Okay.
And so that was, let's say, part of a bigger strategy, but it was just brought forward by somebody on the team that had that insight that says, oh, if this is the direction, here's a huge opportunity that we can move in, and that opened tons and tons of potential market solutions for them.
Yeah. And a few things need to be in place for that to come about, which is, you know, first recognizing that, yeah, we want to expand, you know, beyond our current market space. And in this case, maybe this goes back to your more profit opportunity, you know, that we can sell additional products to our existing customers if we can get beyond the bathroom a little bit. So that realization has to be in place that, yes, this is something we're interested in. Someone was paying attention to some of the customer needs that may have led to some deeper ethnography type research. And then the structure had to be there to not let this stop, right? That someone in the organization must have seen this and said, okay, I'll sponsor that and help to push this forward.
Absolutely. So that insight, you know, we always say, and we know very well, there's never a shortage of good ideas. So this goes back to the innovation pipeline of having the right ideas to commercialize. But this was a well-founded idea. This wasn't, I don't say anything bad, but this wasn't a marketer's idea put into a brief for somebody to design. This was a real unmet need or opportunity to explore this space and then start to design and provide new solutions around.
Yeah, absolutely. And we have seen those marketing attempts at just doing something that's not really new and calling it new, right? This is where goodness for our customers start with, is recognizing that unmet need and figuring out what the real problem is and what would provide value to them and delivering it in a way where they say, yes, I want that thing. You know, give that to me and I'll pay you for it.
So
we got these four buckets to your framework. I'll just review again real quick. So more profit, and that was looking at selling more, selling higher price items, and also cutting, you know, decreasing costs out of the system. Brand equity aspects, the strengthening of the brand, more exposure, more loyalty, more desirability kind of aspects. Talked about the innovation, favorite word, and looking at that being driven from the consumer perspective. That might result in faster time to market also, more value for them. And you mentioned maybe more IP opportunities. And then the fourth bucket wrapped up with was related to change and looking at how we might tackle some of these bigger, you know, wicked societal problems through designing solutions for that. And then I was curious, I drilled down a little bit with you on the aspects of organizations that say they want to be more innovative, they want to be more responsive to customers, and how do we go about getting there. This is really useful. Do you have a PDF of this framework that I can share with listeners?
So I did send you a PDF that is, you're able to distribute that.
That would be great.
If you'd like. I have another one that's a little more simplified if you'd like. So happy to share that along as well.
Okay. I love the visuals. And Everyday Innovators, I will include that in the show notes so you can have the visual representation of this also. And as listeners know, I love innovation quotes. I always ask my guests for an innovation quote. What did you bring us, and tell us why you have that one to share too?
Well, I use my kind of go-to quote for my industry. And I always say that good design management and leadership adds great value to the triple bottom line. So as we said, value is a big word, but we can start to drill down what is the value. It's really about having the right leadership and management to deliver that. And I use the word design. It's interesting. You said the three-sided coin, because I always say that the other side of the coin for us is innovation, but in particular, design-led innovation, because innovation does and should happen all over the place within an organization. But we have the design-led innovation approach.
Good. Great design management and leadership adds great value to the triple bottom line. And that's this is a different perspective for some listeners, and only something I've been kind of warming up to the last few years too, which is this notion of how do we design organizations to really do a better job creating value for customers? And these are four practical buckets that you shared that relate to the work we do as product managers in terms of getting products into customers' hands that provide value. and how we can just do a better job of that as an organization and create value for everyone. So appreciate you walking through those. Certainly, please tell Everyday Innovators just about your company and anything else you want to leave us with.
We, for the past 20 years, have been focused on this space, design and innovation management, and recently leadership. For us, the management leadership is the next evolution. Mm-hmm. I think it's very interesting that we have a very specific niche as far as we don't design any artifacts. There's a lot of great agencies out there that do some of the stuff we do, but we don't design any of the end deliverables, so we can stay very neutral and unbiased into the right process, people, tools, et cetera. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we bring in the right partners. So we consult around vision, strategy, process, tools, organization, people, culture, et cetera. That's been our main offer. And then about 5 years ago, we launched a sister company, which is professional education in the same area. So I always say, if we're not in companies consulting, being smart, telling them the right answers, then we are teaching their people what we do so they can do it for themselves and their roles.
And who's your typical customer? Just frame that a little bit.
Our typical customers are global leading manufacturers in most all categories. So we're a small boutique company. I like the word boutique because it's small, but also very specialized. And we're very fortunate enough to work with number one or number two of their competitors in most industries. Mm-hmm. So we're working with the Unilevers, the Legos, the BMWs of the world, et cetera.
You know, I would be the kid in the candy store, you know, just you get to play with these great companies and help them improve. And I liked, as you talked through this earlier, you talked in a way that you're co-creating with the companies, right? You're making it fit their context, which is the very important thing that we need to do when it comes to any aspect of innovation design here, is it has to make sense for their culture and their organization.
Absolutely.
Very good. Jay, I appreciate your time so much for this interview and for sharing those four buckets of that design value framework for businesses. And I just want to let you wrap up. You have a website you want to share with listeners?
Yeah. The best website to go to kind of see our positioning, our offers, is www.empowering.design.
Empowering.design.
Correct.
Very good. Thanks, Jay.
Excellent. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Thanks for listening. If we're not already connected on LinkedIn, I would love to get a connection request from you. On LinkedIn, just search for Chad McAllister, PhD, and I'll be the first one that you find. Also, you can find my Product Mastery Roadmap if you want to learn more about what it means to become a product master, along with the show notes, that's the summary of that discussion that we just had with Jay. And that's at theeverydayinnovator.com/124. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to The Everyday Innovator, which teaches product managers to become product masters. For more resources, please visit our blog at theeverydayinnovator.com.